going to start from the bottom of Samach Dalet Amud Beis, 7 lines from the bottom from the 2 dots. So the Mishnah told us Kohen HaKarov Itzal HaMizbeach. The Mishnah was discussing that the fact that the Kohen who was standing next to the Mizbeach, so he was the one who would scoop up the blood, and then they would ultimately sprinkle the blood. So the Gemara wants to know, Man Tana Pesach Bizrika, who is the Tana that holds that the Karban Pesach requires Zrikas Adam? You have to sprinkle the blood of the Karban Pesach. Amar Rav Chista Rav Yossi HaGalili, the Sanya Rav Yossi HaGalili Omer, as Damam Tizrok Ala Mizbeach Ves Chelbam Taktir, Damolo Ne'amar Ela Damam, Chelbolo Ne'amar Ela Chelbam, Lined Al Bechor U'maiser U'Pesach Shein Te'unin Matan Damim, Ve'imurin Legabe Mizbeach. So the Gemara cites a Pasuk from the end of Parshas Korach, where the Pasuk is discussing the halachah of a carbon bechor. Now we know that a bechor has the status of kachim kalim. It's a lighter level carbon, and it's the same status as a carbon pesach and a carbon of meiser behema. So although the pasuk in Korach is only talking about a bechor, but the Gemara notes that the fact that the pasuk uses the plural lashon of damam and chelbam in the plural, so that pasuk is almost alluding to the fact that the same standards apply to a carbon pesach and to a carbon meiser behema, and hence, the Gemara says this is the source that a Karban Pesach also requires Zrika, and also requires that the Emurin, that the innards, the limbs of the Karban, be offered upon the Mizbeach. And the Gemara wants to know, Menalan de Te'unin Yesod. How do we know that not only does the Karban Pesach require Zrika Sadam, but that the blood must be sprinkled by the base of the Mizbeach? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Asya Zrika, Zrika Me'ola. We have a Gzera Shava, Ksiv Hacha, Es Damam Tizrok Al HaMizbeach, Uchsiv Hasa, Mizoraku, B'nei Aharon HaKohanim, Es Damam Al HaMizbeach, Savit. Ma'ula Tuna Yisod of Pesach Nami Taun Yisod. So the Gemara links the two psukim by the Karban Ola in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra to the pasuk in Parshas Korach regarding the Bechor, which we just extended to Karban Pesach. And the Gemara says that just as a Karban Ola, the blood must be sprinkled by the base of the Mizbeach, so too the Karban Pesach. So the question obviously now is Va'ola Gufa Menal, and how do we know that the Karban Ola itself has to be sprinkled by the base of the Mizbeach? So the Gemara says, Amar Kra, El Yisod Mizbeach Ola, Alma Ola Tuna Yisod. The Pasuk in Parshas Vayikra says that the blood of the Karban Ola was sprinkled by the Yisod Mizbeach Ola, by the base of the foundation of the Mizbeach. So you see from here that the Karban Ola, the blood of the Ola must be sprinkled by the base of the Mizbeach, and based on the Gzera Shava that we just derived to Karban Pesach, you see the Karban Pesach also the blood must be sprinkled by the base of the Mizbeach. Okay. Then the Mishnah told us, Yatzta Kas Rishona. The Mishnah said that if you remember, the Mishnah was describing that there were 3 different groups of people who participated in the offering of the Karban Pesach, and after the first group left, they would go sit by Harabayas, and then the second group would come in, and then the third group would come in. So the Mishnah basically was describing the procedure or the order of those 3 groups. So the Gemara points out, Tana, he nikres Kas Atzlanis. So the third group, that last group that participated in the Karban Pesach, they were called the lazy group because they were the last ones to come and participate. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? The Gemara says, but the Mishnah was very clear that you needed to have these 3 groups there. So it's not like, it's not their fault. In other words, you need to have these 3 groups. So why is the Gemara almost like referring to them in this derogatory manner that they were lazy if it sounds like from the Mishnah that you need to have these 3 groups participating in the Karban Pesach? So the Gemara says, no. Afilu hachi So the Gemara basically says that yes, it's true that you need to have all 3 groups participating, but still, you know, the people in the third group should have pushed themselves a little bit harder to get into one of the first 2 groups, as the Gemara points out with these 2 very strange mishalim. Well, the first one's not so strange, but the Gemara says that, you know, the world requires perfume makers and requires people who tan hides to make leather. So the Gemara says that even though both of those jobs are necessary, it's much better to be a guy who sells perfume because your shop smells good, whereas if you're a tanner and you sell hides, you smell disgusting all the time. Similarly, the Gemara says that, you know, the world needs men and women, but praiseworthy is the person who gives birth to a male, and woe to the person who gives birth to a female. Why the Gemara says that, what exactly that means, is a separate discussion, which I'm not going to get into right now. Okay, fine. So then the Mishnah says, Kima'asehu b'chol. The Mishnah said, this is a very important point that's going to really kind of segue us into the next parak, really, where the Mishnah told us that the activities that one did in terms of the Karban Pesach when Erev Pesach was on a weekday was exactly the same as if Erev Pesach was on a Shabbos, like this year. And specifically, the Mishnah refers to the fact that they used to clean the floors of the Beis HaMikdash from all of the blood on Erev Pesach, even when Erev Pesach was on a Shabbos. So the Gemara points out, again, this is what the Mishnah told us, Shalo Biritzon Mat. The Mishnah told us that the fact that they were cleaning the floors of the Mikdash on Erev Pesach that fell out on a Shabbos was against the will of the Chachamim. So the question is, who exactly are the Chachamim that were unhappy with the fact they were cleaning the floors of the Mikdash? Amar Rav Chista, Shalo Biritzon Rabbi Eliezer. That must be that Rabbi Eliezer was unhappy with the fact that they were cleaning the floors of the Mikdash when Erev Pesach was on a Shabbos. Di Rabbanan Ha'amri Shivasu Ve'ein Shivas BaMikdash. So if this were to refer to the sheet of the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan presumably would have no problem with cleaning the floors of the Mikdash on Shabbos, because the whole act of cleaning the floors of the Mikdash was, as we'll talk about in a second, was only an Isser de Rabbanan, and as we've spoken about many times in the past, typically, although we'll see in a second, there are a few exceptions to this rule, typically Isser de Rabbanan did not apply in the Mikdash. The Gemara now tries to clarify, Mahi, what exactly is the case here? Desanya, Echad HaChole V'HaMechabetz V'HaMegabin Kigro Geres, HaMechabet V'HaMerabetz V'HaRodeh Chalos Dvash B'Shogeg B'Shabes Chayim Chatas, He's in Beyantif Lokas Arabayim Divri Rabbi Eliezer, V'HaChadim Omer Mechad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Eino Elo Mishum Shavu. So the Gemara presents a famous Machlokas, which appears towards the end of Masechah Shabbos, where the Gemara discusses, again, we spoke a lot about this, if you remember back in Masechah Shabbos, that every malacha that one does on Shabbos must be done in a certain quantity in order for a person to violate that isser, or in order for a person to be punished for it. So for example, the Gemara says, let's say a person milks a cow on Shabbos, or a person wants to curdle milk to separate the curds on the whey, or a person wants to make cheese on Shabbos. So all of those activities are usher on Shabbos. Again, why they're usher is a separate discussion. That's a Masechah Shabbos discussion. But at the end of the day, they're for sure usher. They're for sure malacha, and the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos that a person is only punished for doing these things if they do it to the size of a grogeris, the size of a fig. So in other words, if a person makes cheese that's less than the size of a grogeris, they would not be chayav misa, or they would not be chayav achatas if it was b'shogeg on Shabbos. And then the Gemara says, let's say a person sweeps the floor. That's the part that's relevant for us. You sweep the floor, or you sprinkle water on the floor to clean it, or a person peels a honeycomb out of a beehive on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, if you do that b'shogeg on Shabbos, you're chayav a carbon chatas. If you do a b'mezid on Yontif, then you're chayav malchus. That's all according to Rabbi Eliezer. Whereas the Chachamim say no. That the Chachamim say all of these activities are only midrabbanan, and therefore you're not chayav anything for it. So at this stage, the Gemara sounds like the fact that there were people who were unhappy with the Kohanim cleaning the floor of the Mikdash on Shabbos would presumably only be true according to Rabbi Eliezer, because according to the Rabbanan that we just cited, the Rabbanan think that cleaning the floor of the Mikdash is only derabbanan, is only isser derabbanan, and hence, as we just pointed out, Isuri Durabana typically don't apply in the Mikdash. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Rav Ashi Amar Afilu Tema Shalom Beretzon Chachamim V'Rabbi Nasani. Desani Rabbi Nasan Omer Shavos Tzricha Hitiru Shavos She'ina Tzricha Lo Hitiru. The Gemara suggests that one can even argue that this is not reflecting the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. This could reflect a different issue that's cited by Rabbi Nasan, where Rabbi Nasan tells us that, again, this is a slight limitation on that principle that all Durabanans are mutter in the Mikdash, because according to Rabbi Nasan, Durabanans are only mutter in the Mikdash if there's someone necessary. So if it's considered unnecessary to clean the floors of the Mikdash for whatever reason, as we'll talk about in a second, Rabbi Nassim would say that there is no justification to do so, and therefore you would not be allowed to clean the floors of the Mikdash on Shabbos. Okay. Then the Mishnah told us, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kos Hayam Emali. So Rabbi Yehuda told us that the Kohen used to fill up a cup of blood. They used to scoop the blood off the floor of the Mikdash, and then they would use that to do Zrikas Adam. So the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kos Hayam Emali Midam HaTarovos Shem Yishafich Damo Shel Echad Mehen Nimtza Zem Machshiro. So the Gemara says that they used to basically scoop the blood off the floor of the Mikdash, and that blood was a mixture, a combination of different bloods of different animals that were shechted. And the reason why that was important is because in the event that the blood of the animal that you were trying to do zrika, let's say the regular blood had spilled out of the kos, where it would now be possible, where you would now be unable to do zrika sadam, at least you still had some of that blood left over that you scooped off the floor. So that's why the Gemara says it was necessary for the Kohana to scoop the blood off the floor, because this way, in case the blood spilled, they would still have a little bit left over from that original animal where they could still justify doing zrika. So the Gemara asks, Amar Lola Rabbi Huda, v'halo So the Chacham asked to Rabbi Yehuda, so they asked him, they said, but didn't he not be mekabel the blood in a kli? In other words, The question is, in other words, what right do you have to just scoop the blood off the floor and then say, oh, we're going to do Zrikas Hadam with that? Because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Vachim that if, let's say, you go ahead and shecht the karban and the blood spills out on the floor, you can't use that for Zrikas Hadam. We know one of the stages, one of the steps of bringing a karban is the stage of Kabbalah. You have to receive the blood in the kli. You just scoop the blood off of the floor. So what kind of suggestion is this? So the Gemara then responds, Menayadi. The Gemara says, how do you know? Maybe the Kohen did in fact receive the blood in a kli. Maybe he did do Kabbalah Sadam, and maybe he's just scooping the blood because he wants to have a backup. He wants to have a reserve in case the blood later spills. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elohaki Kamile. Shema lo niskabel b'chli. So the Gemara says, you're right. Perhaps, maybe the Kohen did not do Kabbalah Sadam. So Amar Lehen, so Rabbi Yehuda said, you're right. Afanilo amarti ala b'niskabel b'chli. Rabbi Yehuda says, I agree with you. I only said that this idea works, this notion that the Kohen could scoop the blood off the floor, that is only a valid option if he initially did Kabbalah Sadam, if he initially received the blood in a kli. So then the Gemara says, Mino yada, Kohanim's reasoning. So the Gemara then kind of is astounded by its original question. In other words, remember before the Gemara asked that, oh, how do we know that the Kohen did Kabbalah Sadam? How do we know the Kohen even received the blood in a kli in the first place? The Gemara says, what kind of a question is that? We know from many other places in Shas that Kohanim's reasoning, the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash were very on top of things. They were very aware of what was going on in terms of the Avoda. So the Gemara says, why would we even suspect that they wouldn't do Kabbalah Sadam? Of course they knew that they had to do Kabbalah Sadam. So the Gemara then pushes back. The Gemara says, "Ease reason, amai mishtapich. If they're so on top of things, well then how did the blood spill in the first place?" The Gemara says, no, that's not Akasha. Agav zrizu sayu da'av de mishtapich. They were so into it, they were so involved in the Avoda that they got a little bit too excited and the blood accidentally spilled. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that that might happen. Okay, so then the Gemara...
Rabbi, yeah, go ahead.
Well, again, we pointed out before, earlier in the Gemara, that in fact the blood was a mixture of other carbonos, right? So as long as there was some of the blood from that original carbon in the mixture, and assuming that you also did the original Kabbalah Sadam, right, even if the blood subsequently spilled, that's enough, right? In other words, as long as you have some of that blood remaining after the initial Kabbalah Sadam, that's really all you require. Again, the Gemara is going to still have to iron out some more of these details because there are going to be some other issues that we're going to address.
Why would they scoop it up to begin with if they had already the blood?
No, that was exactly what we just said, because in the event that the blood were to subsequently spill because the Kohanim were getting too excited and too whatever, so therefore they had this almost as like a backup, as a reserve in case the original blood spilled. That's what the Gemara is assuming.
So I thought we learned that this blood was like ankle high and from all the different...
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that in the Gemara a little bit later. Yeah.
How do you know, or is the assumption that the blood, whatever you scoop up, is from your carbon because it's all...
Well, no, that's the exact point. The Gemara says, no, that whatever you scoop up, we don't assume it's from your carbon exclusively. It's from all the carbon. So as long as there's some blood from your carbon in there, that's good enough, right? We can assume that as long as there's a little bit of blood from yours. And again, the Gemara is going to discuss a lot of these details in terms of bitul and in terms of maybe, you know, what if the blood from a different carbon outnumbers the blood, you know, from your carbon. So we're going to get to that in a second. But
you also have the issue of Zerika. You have to have some carbonos or above a line, some below a line.
That's a separate discussion. The Gemara actually does not really address that here. But yeah, that's a good question because the different carbonos require Zerika in different ways. But again, the main point of this Gemara is that you're still doing Zerika with the blood of that animal that you shechted, that you just shechted. So you know the halacha of that animal. Now, again, remember, you initially did Kabbalah Sadam, you received the blood, and then because the Kohanim got a little bit too excited, the blood spilled. So now you're relying on the fact that some of that blood was on the floor that you're scooping up. So even though there may be a chance that 90% of that blood may be from a different animal, but it doesn't matter because you're not doing Zerika for those other animals. You're doing Zerika for your animal. So as long as some of that blood remains, and again, we'll see as we go on why this is so, but basically the bottom line is that would still be considered a valid Zerika Sadam. Okay.
But wouldn't all of these be the same, Pesach Karbanot, so the Zerika line with that, they would all be the same?
No, that's true, but I'm saying, you know, what if it mixed with the blood of the carbon tumid that you brought earlier, or the blood of other carbonos, whatever, again.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now the Gemara has another problem here. V'halo damatamtzis me'uravbo. So the Gemara says, before we get into any of the other, more obvious questions, the Gemara has another issue here regarding what's called damatamtzis. We spoke about damatamtzis in the past. Damatamtzis basically is the blood that comes out of an animal after after the initial spurt of blood. So in other words, there's basically a distinction in halacha between what's called dam ha-nefesh and dam ha-tamsis. Dam ha-nefesh is like the real mekoy, the real hardcore blood that's considered the life source of the animal, without which the animal cannot survive. The dam ha-tamsis is almost like the afterflow, like the stuff that comes after the real initial spurt of blood. So the problem is that dam ha-tamsis is not valid for zrikas adam. So the question is, when I scoop blood off the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, and I want to do zrikas adam, there's a pretty good chance that there's dam ha-tamsis in there, which is not valid for zrika. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Rabbi Huda letameh, to amar dam ha-tamsis dam ha-alyuhu, desanya dam ha-tamsis ba'azhara, Rabbi Huda omer behikares. The Gemara says, this actually happens to be a machlokes in the Gemara in Maseches Krisos and Chulin and a few other places, where Rabbi Huda happens to disagree with this. Rabbi Huda happens to hold that dam ha-tamsis is real bona fide blood. How does he know that? So the Gemara has a machlokes, because we know, of course, in the Torah, in Parshas Kedoshim, there's an isser to oraisa to eat blood. Lo sochlu al adam. So according to the Chachamim, that isser to eat blood really is primarily focusing on dam ha-nefesh, on the real life blood of the animal. There is somewhat of an isser to also eat the dam ha-tamsis, to drink the dam ha-tamsis, but the Gemara says that's only in asar, it's just a regular lav. You only get malkus for that, according to the Chachamim. Whereas Rabbi Huda says, no, dam ha-tamsis is also considered real bona fide blood, and therefore Rabbi Huda holds that you would get curries for that the same way you would get curries for dam ha-nefesh. So Rabbi Huda happens to hold that dam ha-tamsis is in fact considered to be real blood. Okay. Then the Gemara asks, V'ha'ama Rabbi Elazar, Moda Rabbi Huda le'inyan kapara she'eino mechaper she'ne'emar ki hadam hu ba'nefesh yechaper dam she'hanefesh yotza bo mechaper dam she'ein hanefesh yotza bo eino mechaper. The Gemara says, but how can you say, in other words, how can we say that Rabbi Huda makes this distinction between dam ha'nefesh and dam ha'tamsis? I'm sorry. That Rabbi Huda holds that dam ha'tamsis and dam ha'nefesh are basically the same thing. That dam ha'tamsis is considered to be on par with dam ha'nefesh. Don't we see that there's in fact, even according to Rabbi Huda, a distinction? Because the pasuk tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, ki adam hu ba'nefesh yechaper, that blood is considered to be a kapara, but the pasuk specifies ha'nefesh, ki adam hu ba'nefesh yechaper. The Gemara derives from that pasuk that it's specifically dam ha'nefesh, the real life blood of the animal. That's what affects kapara via zrikas adam, implying that dam ha'tamsis does not, even according to Rabbi Huda. So what right do we have to say that Rabbi Huda just lumps the two of them together? If anything, it sounds like he's distinguishing between the two. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo Rabbi Huda letame to Amar in dam levatel dam. The Gemara says, you're right. Really, the logic here behind Rabbi Huda has nothing to do with distinctions or similarities between dam ha-nefesh and dam ha-tamsis, but rather the reason why Rabbi Huda is okay with what's going on here is based on a different principle called ein dam bevatel dam. Now again, we've mentioned in the past, and you know this come up in many places in Shas, about the concept of bitol, about nullification. We know the Gemara basically says that blood is not mevatel other blood. Now again, why that is, you know, that has to do with, you know, very technical rules of bitol b'shishim and lach b'lach, since they're both liquids. So, but at the end of the day, the Gemara says that the blood is not mevatel blood, and because of that, the Gemara says that any blood that in other words, let's say, for example, the blood I scooped off the floor is 90%, either 90% dam ha-tamsis or 90% blood of a different animal, and it's only 10% the blood of the animal that I need to do zrika for. Rabbi Huda says that's still okay. We don't invoke the principle of bitul because of this idea that ein dam mevatel dam. That blood, again, because maybe they're both considered to be a davar lach, they're both considered to be something which is a liquid. At the end of the day, Rabbi Huda says that we do not invoke the principle of bitul, and therefore we can still justify doing zrika because we assume that some of the blood of that animal is still going to be there. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
A quick question. Does the concept of blood from the floor apply to all carbon out, or we're talking specifically to Pesach?
It sounds like specifically for the carbon Pesach, because, you know, they brought so many carbonos, it sounds like there was more of a possibility that the blood was going to spill because the Kohanim were so busy, were so involved trying to get all the korbanos offered and zrika done, so it sounds like this is probably unique for Karim Pesach, I would imagine, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Tanya, Amar lehen Rabbi Huda lachachamim, lidivreichem lama pokeken esoaz zara. So now, Rabbi Huda turns to the Chachamim and asks the following. He says, according to the Chachamim, why is it that Chazal insisted that we plug up the floor of the Azara? Now, according to Rabbi Huda, it makes a lot of sense, because Rabbi Huda just told us that you have to scoop the blood off the floor as a reserve in case the original blood spills. So it makes perfect sense why you want the blood to pool everywhere on the floor of the Azara. But according to the Chacham, they don't do this, they don't scoop blood off the floor. What's the point of plugging up the floor of the Azara? So the Chacham say, Amrulo, Shivachu livnei Aron, Sheyelchu Adarku Huseyam Badam. It was considered to be praiseworthy that the Kohanim would walk up to their ankles in blood. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'hakachayitz. The Gemara says, but isn't that considered a chatzitza? We know, based on Pesukim and Parashas Tzav, that the Kohanim's feet have to touch directly on the ground of the Beis HaMikdash. So there cannot be any sort of a chatzitza. So how is this considered praiseworthy? If anything, it should be problematic. So the Gemara says, no. Lachu ve'eino chotis. Similar to what we were saying earlier in the Gemara, since the blood is a davar lach, since it's considered to be something which is a liquid, it does not constitute a chatzitza. How do we know that? Kidasanya. Hadam v'hadiyo v'hachala v'hadavash yaveshim chotitzin. Lachin ein chotitzin. And the Gemara says that these different types of things, blood, ink, milk, and honey, are only constitute a chatzitza if they're dry. But if they're moist, if they're a liquid, so then it's not a problem. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have another issue here. V'hakam mitav se manayu. But aren't they going to get their begadim dirty? Right? Why is that a problem? So the Gemara explains, because disanya hayu begadim mitushtashin v'avad avodah so psula. If the Kohanim do avoda while their clothing are dirty or soiled, that avoda is puzzle. So the Gemara says, what kind of a praise is this to have their ankles up to the blood of the karbanos? They're going to get the garments dirty, and that's going to be a problem. The Gemara says, "V'chitema demadlu luhu lemanayu." Maybe you'll tell me that, oh, the Kohanim just simply pick up the bottom of their pants, so this way they don't get the garments dirty. The Gemara says, but that's not okay either. V'hasanya midovad mido kimidaso shelo yechaser velo yosir. So the Gemara says, based on a pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Tzav, that the begadim have to fit the Kohanim perfectly. So if the Kohen picks up the garment, that's almost a demonstration that it doesn't quote unquote fit him perfectly. Now again, it does. He's just picking it up a little bit, but at the end of the day, the Gemara says that the garments have to be a perfect fit. So by picking them up a little, that's also a problem. So the Gemara says no. But holachas evarin lakevesh delav avodah. No. This act of the Kohanim picking up the pants, that was done when they were bringing the various limbs of the karban to the ramp of the mizbeach, which doesn't really constitute an avoda anyway. So this requirement, this notion that the begadim had to fit perfectly, was only true b'shas avoda. Since this was not technically called an avoda, they did not need to fit perfectly. The Gemara says really velo v'ham midabay kahuna avoda. The Gemara says, but the fact that you require a Kohen to do this, based on the Pasuk and Parashas Vayikra that says that the Kohen would bring all the parts of the animal, the karma, to the Mizbeach, that's a clear indication that this is called an Avoda. If it wasn't an Avoda, why would you require a Kohen? We know, like for example, Shechita can be done by a non-Kohen, because Gemara points out Shechita is not technically called an Avoda. So the fact that we're requiring a Kohen to do this shows that it really is an Avoda. So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, Ela beholach the Gemara says that really we're talking about the point in time when the Kohanim are carrying the wood for the Ma'aracha, for the pyre that lay on top of the Mizbeach. That was not called an Avoda. So at that point, they were allowed to lift up their pants. Then the Gemara says, okay, but holachas evarim lakeveshu v'holachas dam miyahichi azle. Okay, but at the end of the day, when they were carrying the parts of the animal, or when they were bringing the blood to the Mizbeach, at the end of the day, how could they do that? Because that was an Avoda. They couldn't lift up their pants. On the other hand, the pants were going to get dirty, which is also a problem. So what do they do? So the Gemara says, no, Damascus, it's today. The case was where they walked on top of some kind of a platform that was laid up, that was set up in the Beis HaMikdash. So this way, they were almost walking on top of the blood, so the blood would not end up getting their garments dirty, but they also would not need to pick up their pants at the end of the day. Okay. Then we said, Ketzad tolenu mafshitin, karu vehotziu esei murav, nesana b'mages lahaktiram. So the Mishnah was discussing the act of flaying and skinning the carbon Pesach. So the Mishnah said that they would basically tear it open. They would take out all of the innards, all of the intestines, and then they would put the blood in one of these containers, and the guy would stir the blood, because basically the Gemara says that you can't, that really the Karban Tamid was supposed to be offered before the Karban Pesach, but technically if it was brought before, as long as the guy was still stirring the blood, that was going to be good enough. So the Gemara asks, Atuhu Gufe Hava Makdir Lehu? So the Gemara asks that grammatically the Mishnah is a little bit misleading, because the Mishnah sounds like that the same Kohen who's going to skin the animal is the same guy who's going to go stir the blood, but we know that it was done by two different Kohanim. So the Gemara says, you're right. All the Mishnah meant to say was that the first Kohen skins the animal and then puts all of the innards by the Mizbech, and then the other Kohen goes and stirs the blood of the carp. Okay, and then finally the Mishnah told us, Yatz the Kas Rishona, Tana Kol Echad V'Echad Nosin Pischo Be'oro Umav Shil Yachurav, Amar of Ilish Tayoz. The Mishnah Gemara has a famous machlokas here about the way in which they used to handle the hides, the skins, the leather of the animal, of the Karban Pesach after it was shechted. So according to the Chachamim, they basically just took the skins of the animal and would sling it over their shoulder, and they would, you know, walk away with the skins. According to Rav Ilish says Tayaos, which basically means that they used to act like these Arab merchants. They used to like almost put it like put the skins like over their head, almost like the turbans a little bit. Again, this was kind of a detailed machlokas about the way in which they used to walk away with the skins of the animal. Okay, Hajnalach Tamin Nishcha. Okay, now moving into the next parak. So now we're going to be discussing which aspects of the Karban Pesach are Docha Shabbos and which are not, which is again, you know, theoretically relevant to this year when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos. The Mishnah says,
maybe we'll get to that now, but Rabbi, didn't we say that one of the things that they couldn't do was carry the...
We're going to discuss that.
So how are they taking this out if they couldn't bring it in?
What do you mean?
We said they couldn't bring the carbon.
They couldn't carry it, let's say, in the Rosh Hasharabim to get to the Beis HaMikdash. Once it's already in the Mikdash, so then a lot of these...
Didn't it just say now that they carry it out after the Shabbos?
Again, this is talking about the skins of the animal. This is different. This is already after the animal's been shechted. That was the last thing we saw in the Gemara. The Mishnayos now are going to be discussing the actual process of shechting, offering, skinning, all those aspects of the carbon Pesach. We'll see which are and which are not Docha Shabbos, as we'll see right now. Okay, so the Mishnah says Elu Devarim BeFesach Dochen Es HaShabbos. The following activities, as it relates to the Karban Pesach, are Docha Shabbos: Shchitaso Uzrikas Damo Umichui Karavav VaHaktaras Chalavav Avol Tzliaso VaHadachas Karavav Inon Dochen Es HaShabbos. So the Mishnah says that Shchita, of course, is Docha Shabbos. The Zrikas Adam, the sprinkling of the blood, is Docha Shabbos. The cleaning of the innards, and also offering the fats of the carbon, those are all Docha Shabbos, but the roasting of the carbon Pesach, and then the rinsing of the innards, those are not Docha Shabbos. Then the Mishnah says, Har kavaso v'hava'aso michutz latchum b'chasichas yabalto ein dochen es ha-shabbos, Rabbi Eliezer omer dochen. Then the Mishnah has a machlokes about whether you're allowed to bring the animal from beyond the tchum. Now, normally we know that the isser of tchum, we pass in the tchum, is only an isser d'rabanan. So the Mishnah says that according to the Chachamim, bringing the animal on your shoulders, let's say it's a very young animal, can't walk on its own, so putting it on your shoulders, or just stop carrying it from beyond the tchum, or let's say the animal has some kind of a mum that's temporary, but you need to cut off that mum in order to validate it as a karban. So all of those activities, according to the Chachamim, are not Docha Shabbos, but according to Rabbi Eliezer, they are. I'm a Rabbi Eliezer of a halo dinhu. So Rabbi Eliezer basically says to the Chachamim, he says, my position seems very logical. He says, Shchita, everyone agrees that the Shchita of the Karban Pesach is Docha Shabbos. Shchita is a real bona fide malacha. So Rabbi Eliezer says, if you're telling me that a real malacha is Docha Shabbos, so then Kal v'chomer, something like bringing the animal from beyond the Tchum, which is only an Isser D'Rabbanan at worst, for sure should be Docha Shabbos. So the question is, how do the Rabbanan respond? So Amar Li Rabbi Yehoshua, Yom Tov Yochi, So Rabbi Yehoshua tries to deflect Rabbi Eliezer's argument, and he says as follows. He says that I'm going to bring you a proof from Yontif to undermine your theory. Why? Because on Yontif we know that there are certain malachos d'oraisa that are mutter on Yontif. Specifically, anything that's done for ochel nefesh, anything food related, is of course mutter on Yontif. And yet the halacha is that there are still isurim d'rabbanan that apply on Yontif. So in other words, one could have made this argument, according to Rabbi Eliezer, well, if I'm allowed to cook on Yontif, so then maybe we should throw all the Rabbanans out the window. The fact that's not true, so Rabbi Yehoshua says, that seems to undermine Rabbi Eliezer's theory. So Amar Le Rabbi Eliezer, Maza Yehoshua, Maraya Rishus LeMitzvah. So Rabbi Eliezer says back to Rabbi Yehoshua, he says, what kind of a proof is that? What kind of a comparison is that? He says, you're trying to compare something which is a Rishus to something which is a Mitzvah, meaning there is no specific obligation to cook on Yontif. You don't have to cook on Yontif. Again, maybe there's a Mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, which we'll get to in the Gemara a little bit later, but, you know, ostensibly, there's no mitzvah to do malachas ochel nefesh on Yontif. There's a heter. If you want to cook on Yontif, if you want to bake on Yontif, you can, but it's not specifically a mitzvah to do so, whereas all the aspects of the Karban Pesach that we're discussing are all mitzvah oriented. So again, the Mishnah says, so again, you can't really compare the two. So then the Mishnah says, Heshev Rabbi Akiva v'amar, hazah tochiach, shehim yishum mitzvah, v'him yishum shavus, v'ein adocha es ha-shabbos. Then Rabbi Akiva responds, well, he says, I'll bring you a proof, again, from a slightly different area of halacha, from the para aduma. We know that if a person is tamei lemes and they want to become tahor, so part of the aspect, one of the halachos of the para aduma is that they require hazah shlishi yushvi. They have to get the ashes, the blood, and the water of the para aduma sprinkled upon them on the third and the seventh day of their tuma. So that act of hazah, it's a mitzvah to do so, but it's also an isra derabanan to do on Shabbos, and it's not docha Shabbos. But the question is, why not? If it's a mitzvah, then it should be docha Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, no, afa ta'al tisma alilu, sha'afa pi shehin mishum mitzvah vehin mishum shivas, lo yirchu es ha-Shabbos. So Rabbi Akiva says, just as the act of hazah by the para aduma, which is a mitzvah, but it's also an isra derabanan on Shabbos, is not docha Shabbos, we should say the same thing that applies to the Karban Pesach. Yes, it's a mitzvah, yes, it's a din derabanan, but because it's an isra derabanan, it's not going to be docha Shabbos. So Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, ve'oleha ani don. So Rabbi Eliezer responds, he says, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Uma'im shchita shehi mishum malacha docha es ha-Shabbos, hazah shehi mishum shivus eno din she docha es ha-Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer basically says like this, he says that, again, as we pointed out earlier in the Mishnah, shchita is a real bona fide malacha, and yet it's docha Shabbos for the Karban Pesach. So then the act of hazah, the para aduma, which is only derabanan, should certainly be docha Shabbos. Meaning, Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the original premise of the Mishnah. He holds that the hazah of the para aduma is in fact docha Shabbos for that very reason, because since the shchita is docha Shabbos, which is a real malacha, then kal v'chomer, the sprinkling of the para aduma, the ashes and the water, should certainly be docha Shabbos. So Amar lo Rabbi Akiva ochiluf. So then Rabbi Akiva responds to Rabbi Eliezer, maybe you could suggest the opposite. Ma im hazah Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, his starting point is that the hazah, the sprinkling of the para aduma ashes, is not docha Shabbos. So you could suggest, well, if that's not docha Shabbos, then maybe kal v'chomer, the shchita of the Karban Pesach, should certainly not be docha Shabbos. That's a real malacha. To which Rabbi Eliezer responds, he says, Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer Akiva, akarta ma shekasuv b'Torah b'moado bein b'chol bein b'Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Akiva, he says, what are you doing? He says, there's an explicit pasuk in Parshas Bahaloscha that we derive from the word b'moado, we derive that the Karban Pesach must be offered even on Shabbos. How can you just ignore that? How can you say that the Shechita Hasa Karban Pesach is not Docha Shabbos? It's against the Pasuk in Chumash. So Amar lo Rebbe, havi li moe le'elu kamoe le'shechita. To which Rabbi Akiva responds to Rabbi Eliezer and says that these two cases are not comparable. He says, I of course agree with you that the Shechita Hasa Karban of course is Docha Shabbos. That's a Pasuk in Chumash. That's what our Mishnah told us. That no one debates that. He says, but that being said, He says the other activities that we were discussing are not bound by a specific time frame. In other words, he says that, you know, when it comes to the shechitas of the Karban Pesach, that has to be done on Erev Pesach. That's the day that it has to be done. Whereas when it comes to the hazah, let's say, of the para aduma, so although it's supposed to be done on the third and the seventh day, it never says in Chumash you have to do it on this calendar day. You do it on third and seventh day. If one of those days happens to be Shabbos, then you push it off a day. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says again, you can't necessarily compare these two cases. And finally, the Mishnah ends off, Klal Amar Rabbi Akiva, Kol Malacha She'efshar La'asosa Me'erev Shabbos, Ina Dochas HaShabbos, Shechita She'efshar La'asosa Me'erev Shabbos, Dochas HaShabbos. A famous principle that Rabbi Akiva develops in several places throughout Shas, where he says, basically, that any malacha that could have been done from before Shabbos is not Docha Shabbos, but the Shechita, which has to be done on Erev Pesach, is in fact going to be Docha Shabbos.